Funding for Inner Compass is provided by Calvin College.
The life that's unfolding.
The world that awaits.
Gifts that are yours to explore.
And God's to use.
It's all happening here at Calvin.
Welcome to Inner Compass. I'm Karen Salpe. When Jesus left this earth, Christians spread throughout the world to tell his message. Have you ever wondered about the few who stayed behind in the Holy Land? The numbers have dwindled today because of political tension, but our guest today will tell us what life is like there now. Join us on Inner Compass.
From the campus of Calvin College, this is Inner Compass, exploring how people use faith and ethics to guide them through critical issues of today.
My guest today is author and activist Maria Khoury, whose family moved to a village near Jerusalem shortly after the Oslo Peace Agreement of 1993 to help bolster the Christian presence in the Holy Land. Welcome, Maria.
Thank you.
The village you live in was visited about 2,000 years ago by someone who's become pretty well known. Please tell us about that.
Well, Taibe is well known for receiving Christ right before his crucifixion, and that's when Jesus wanted to escape from Jerusalem with his disciples. And he came for a few days in Taibe, which is known as Biblical Ephraim. That's our biblical name, but our name was changed in the 12th century to Taibe.
Right, by the emperor, by Saladin.
At that time, when the Islamic leader Salahuddin came into the area, he was just stunned that the Christians were generous and kind, fed his horses, fed the soldiers, and he made a statement that they are Taibin, and in Arabic this means good. And since that day in the 12th century, Ephraim took on the modern name Taibe.
So that's a good name, and so there's been a Christian presence there for...
Since the time of Christ, for 2,000 years.
Okay. This is, you said, the only all-Christian village in the area now, correct?
By that I mean that our tiny little village is having all of its residents, 1,300 people, all of Christian faith, and they're all, the landowners are of Christian faith. So it's the only 100% Christian village that remains in Palestine today.
Okay. And it has been so then for all these years. Are most of the residents of this area descendants of the original Christians, or do we have any way of knowing that?
Well, most Christians in the Holy Land, yes. We do trace our roots to the time of the apostles, because that is the mother church.
Yeah.
And so Christians in the Holy Land trace their roots back to the first apostles. My husband's family traces his the family roots, the Khoury roots, 600 years in the village of Taibe. So that's a very beautiful family tree. It's like a piece of art of 600-year presence for the Khoury family in Taibe.
Okay. But your own family is Greek, so will you tell us your story and how you came to be living in the Holy Land?
Well, yes, I am a Greek by birth because I was born in Greece, and like most immigrant parents, my parents came to this country for better educational opportunities for their children and financial opportunities. But when I went to study at a Greek college, at Hellenic College, I met the only non-Greek boy there, and that was my husband David, who wanted to return to Palestine after the Oslo Agreement and after he was a student in Boston for many years to invest in Palestine and help boost the economy.
Okay, so you you met and fell in love with David, and there must have been some family difficulties with this relationship.
Well, the thing is that he should have married a nice Arab girl from his village. And like all Greek girls, their parents expect them to marry a nice Greek boy.
Sure.
But I think I've always felt that my life was always in God's hand, and this was the road that God has put in front of me. And I really ended up as a Greek and as a Christian in a very isolated, tiny little village in the middle of Judea, biblical Judea, among Jews and among Muslims. And so it really started a very different journey for me to give a presence and to find a connection, not being a Palestinian, wanting to find a connection to the land so my life can have meaning. And the only connection I could find is that these are the footsteps that Christ made, and this was the land that Christ was born and where Christ was resurrected. And this was the only connection I could find to Palestine, and began to
That's pretty powerful.
Be happier living there instead of being miserable that I left my multicultural city of Boston and all of the freedoms of the U.S. to live in a tiny little Christian village in the West Bank.
Right. Now, your husband opened a brewery there.
His investment was opening a brewery to make the only microbrewed beer in the Middle East, Taibe beer. He's so proud to be from Taibe. His grandfather was the village priest, and so he named the beer after the village, Taibe beer.
And he, part of what he wanted to do was, of course, strengthen the local economy there, but why a brewery of all the possible companies to begin in a land where Muslims are forbidden to drink alcohol, right?
Well, I think for us, my brother-in-law Nadim, who's the brewmaster, it was more also his hobby turned into work. But for us right now, Taibe beer reflects the democracy that can exist in Palestine. And also we feel it expresses our freedoms, that if we are to have freedom and a democracy, that as Christian people we are allowed to have alcohol products. So and we wanted to create a nationalistic feeling because Palestinian products were not well known, and with a chance of the Oslo Agreement, we wanted to say if Palestinians can have freedom, if they can have their own country, we too can make excellent products so people can select Palestinian and support the local economy and help put people into work, help create jobs.
And where is Taibe beer sold then? I mean, obviously outside Palestine.
Well, it's sold in restaurants and bars in Jerusalem and in Bethlehem, but also in Tel Aviv and also in Jaffa and in Haifa. And it's exported and it's available in Japan as well.
Really?
And it was exported to Europe because of the difficulties with the Israeli port and always having to have permits. It's the first Palestinian product to be franchised, and it's made in Germany under our license in Taibe.
Interesting. And is it available here?
In the United States, we hope it will be in the future, but it's not available
but that's on
in
the future
USA.
Plans. You and your husband have children that you've brought up in a land that's sort of tumultuous. What has that experience been like?
Well, for me, I have two boys and one girl, and raising Kanan, Constantine, and Elena, you know, with constant checkpoints and closures and the daily hardships of occupation has really been a challenge to teach them the Christian values and traditions, because mostly we believe in forgiveness and turning the other cheek. So when we experience hardships from the soldiers, it really takes all of God's grace inside of our hearts to turn around and to say to that Israeli soldier, God protect you today, although he's not letting us pass to go to the 8 o'clock, you know, chemistry test that we have to take. So it's been a challenge to try to reinforce that as Christian people,
really
the main core of our faith is, you know, forgiveness.
So you're not just there to maintain a Christian cultural or like ethnic presence, but really to spread the gospel.
Well, for us, just we see our investment in Palestine as, you know, peaceful resistance, and we see our presence in Palestine also as peaceful resistance, because there's different forms of resistance. So we want to continue to be, you know, witnesses for Christ in this very sacred land where the Lord was resurrected from, and when the gospel was first taught by Christ himself. So it's just a matter of trying to have people in some of these churches to be able to give glory to God, because we have so many churches and they're just being emptied out because the terrible wars and the occupation, the terrible collapsed economy forces people to leave. And we want to maintain a small Christian community, as small as it is. We want to just continue to have our right to exist there.
Sure. You've written, well, you've written several children's books, and we'll talk about those. You've also written Witness in the Holy Land, which is almost sort of a diary-type book about your experiences. And you talk about the daily difficulties, which I'll ask you to describe, when you were first living there, and then how much worse it got in 2000. Will you tell us a little bit about your typical day at home?
Well, moving around is the most difficult thing in Palestine because of the wall now completely finished by Israel. It's almost like we are prisoners in an open space, and we're really closed up from different other communities that exist in Palestine, where the wall is completely all around Bethlehem or completely all around Ramallah area. So it's very difficult to go even from a Palestinian village like Taibe to a Palestinian city like Ramallah. So mm-hmm. although I'm not going anywhere near the security of Israel, threatening mm-hmm. Israel, I'm only going from a Palestinian spot to another Palestinian spot. I have to go through 5 checkpoints to get there. Our main roads are shut down. And so I need to go through the mountain backway roads, which are full of holes. They're very steep. They're very narrow. They might have a lot of rocks, so they're not the regular roads, because we have the settlement roads, which are really for Israeli settlements only, mm-hmm. and Palestinians need permits to be on those roads.
True.
So it's very frustrating living in a situation where you can't do a simple thing like, you know, go to school, go to the hospital for a checkup. Very sad that we live only 10 minutes away from some of the most sacred holy sites like Christ's holy tomb. And if you're a Christian person, you just can't get there without a permit. Mm-hmm. And people can come from all over the world and venerate in Jerusalem and see the life-giving tomb of Christ.
But you and who live nearby cannot.
And Palestinian Christians cannot go there. And sometimes getting permits is very difficult because it takes hours on end wait. And then even I've been to the coordinating office myself asking for permits for my husband. And I've been there sometimes from the morning, 8 a.m. until midnight, and still have not, you know, received a permit.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a very agonizing kind of procedure to try to get this permit.
You see that as almost a kind of terrorism. It's not violence, but it's kind of maddening.
Well, actually, as Palestinian people on the ground, we experience violence every day. And the violence is being carried out by the Israeli army, invading our areas, demolishing homes, putting up more and more. So we are being violated each and every day with our human rights and with the terrible invasions that happen into Ramallah and to the other areas like Nablus and Hebron.
Most of us in the United States, I think, perceive the conflicts in the Middle East as being primarily between the Muslims and the Israelis. And we forget about this tiny population of Christians, and the Christian population is not, is it maybe less than 5% of the area?
We're less than 2% of the 4 million Palestinians that exist in the West Bank and Gaza.
And 100 years ago, that percentage was closer to 25 or 30%. So Christians have really bled out of the area. But it's not, so as Christians, do you sort of take sides, or are you really simply caught in the middle of this bigger conflict?
Well, most Christians in the Holy Land are, Palestinians are Christians and Muslims. Mm-hmm. It's just that the Christians are less than 2% of the population.
Right.
We try through our private schools to teach nonviolent resistance to this terrible occupation.
Yeah.
So we try to promote peaceful ways instead of violent ways to protest the occupation.
Sure.
So that's why sometimes it is the violence that gains, you know, the media,
right,
and maybe some of the other efforts, you know, through writing, through peaceful protests, our community still exists there. And in Christian schools, we try to teach the nonviolent ways of resisting occupation.
What are relationships like in your, I mean, you're in an all-Christian village, but you obviously must have contact with Muslims and with Jews, apart even, I would assume, from the checkpoints and so forth. Or is that right? I mean, do you have day-to-day contact?
Well, pretty much the Israeli settlements are all around us, and mm-hmm. we're very segregated from them. However, with Palestinians at schools and at work, both Christians and Muslims go to school together and work together,
mm-hmm.
and the relationships are quite fair.
Okay.
But with Israeli settlers, we have the army all around our areas protecting the Israeli settlers. So
you really don't have healthy interactions from day to day at the grocery with Israeli neighbors or anything at all?
No, we don't. We're completely segregated.
Okay.
And the reason that is because illegal Israeli settlements build all around us are basically using up all the resources in our area. Our water might be shut off 3 days a week in our village, but the settlement has water 7 days a week, 24 hours a day. And like I said, the army is there to protect the settlements, so there's no interaction between Arabs and the settlements in the West
Bank. Right. What else, when you first moved to Taipei, you felt that there were a lot of inconveniences and difficulties, and that was before it got much worse. But what were the hardest things for you when you first moved there?
Well, I mean, being in a small little village, of course, you always have electricity problems. The electricity goes out, the water goes out. I mean, central heating is not available, you know, for everyone. So some of the conveniences and just the wonderful activities that children have here in terms of, I used to take my children to soccer every week, to hockey because we lived in Boston, piano lessons, you know, Greek school. This was just the middle class life that I had to give up being in a small little village. But then, unfortunately, since September 28, 2000, it's sort of been very violent and sort of going back 100 years.
What precipitated that change? Please remind us.
Well, in September 28, 2000, the former Prime Minister of Israel, Ariel Sharon, took a visit to the Islamic holy site, but it wasn't a regular visit because he had thousands of soldiers and policemen with him. And it was trying to make a statement that there will be, Jerusalem is Jewish, and that started just a whole battle where there's a protest because holy sites are very sacred. This is a city that's sacred to
all
Muslims, to Christians, to Jews, and everyone wants to protect their presence there. So we had just hundreds of people going to the checkpoints to protest against this visit, and this started the Palestinian Second Uprising.
Right.
There's a lot of Muslims that are also peaceful, but we have the extremist on the Palestinian side, and we have the extremist on the Israeli side, and they swallow up our voices. So the fanatics on both sides, unfortunately, do not show that there are many people in the middle on the Israeli side and the Palestinian side that just want prosperity for their children, want a future for their children. And we want to find ways to coexist and to share, you know, this sacred land that's sacred to everyone. But, I mean, as long as it's got to be a just kind of peace and a just kind of settlement where everyone is receiving human rights, not continuing to have you know, Israeli roads for Israeli Israelis only. The Tel Aviv airport only we can't even get a permit to use the Israeli airport anymore if you're a Palestinian.
Right. What's it been like to bring up children then in this circumstance? You write in your book that in 2000 you really wanted to pack them up and bring them back to Boston, but you didn't.
My children have learned to live under hardships, and this, the difficulties of the situation there and the awful violence has made for a strong character in Cain and Elena and Constantine. And because they are proud to be from Taipei, because this was very important to my father-in-law, Canaan, because he thought that if children know their roots and where they came from, this allows them to achieve their fullest potential in their life. And he was always very proud that he came from this small little Christian village in Palestine and that his father was the parish priest. And he wanted to pass on this beautiful legacy to his grandchildren. And so my children, through the awful checkpoints and the awful living conditions, have developed a strongness in character, and they've realized that if we want to be Palestinians living in Palestine, we must live with these hardships, or else we could, like the rest of the population, over 5,000 people from Taipei, half of them live in Detroit, Michigan. So there's more people from Taipei in Guatemala today and in Detroit, Michigan, than Taipei itself.
Your children, are they now in college in the United States?
They're becoming college age, yes.
Right. And so do you think that when they start spending more time here, that that's going to be a draw away? Or do you think they're really committed to being back?
You know, it's very difficult because many students come here or go to England or go to Australia to study, and then they just stay and overpopulate the area and make big money in the countries they're in, because we're faced with, if they return to Palestine, with such low salaries. And they get spoiled sometimes because of the freedom and the great salaries that exist outside of Palestine. So this is now a big challenge to see, will my children make the same conscious decision that my husband and I made to live under harsh conditions just to be able to support our small community.
Yeah.
And we are, you know, hoping and praying that they'll get their education and they will return,
mm-hmm.
you know, to practice their professions, and for sure for someone to carry on the work of the brewery
mm-hmm.
In Tibet.
Yeah. Well, it wouldn't be great. Well, wouldn't it be great if they could come back to a more peaceful Tibet?
Yeah, yeah, hopefully.
What's it like for you as, I don't want to say an outsider, but it's someone who has not grown up in the area, to be part of that community? How does Tibet receive you personally?
Yeah, well, I turned my services to the church, and so I work in helping people, for example, at St. George Church that do not have homes and do not own land, starting a program where we're assisting them to build their first home. And so I feel that I'm very well received in the village because I give most of my work into community service.
You're serving the community.
Yeah, and in the last 2 years, in a very collapsed economy, since my husband David became the mayor of Tibet, we tried to start a program of doing a village festival, the Tibet Oktoberfest, using our good name of Tibet
beer. I love that, the Oktoberfest, yeah.
To entice people to come into the village,
mm-hmm.
and these are mostly internationals that are working in Israel and Palestine, but to come into the village for the festival, and then they end up buying the honey, the embroidery, the olive woods, the items that people in the village and the women's cooperatives produce, and that has helped boost the economy at a 60% unemployment rate that exists.
Are there other ways that Tibet could be exporting goods, or is that complicated by political situations?
Well, the difficulty is just the awful checkpoints and also not being able to have a port of our own.
Mm-hmm.
So to use the Israeli port when we export the beer to Japan means a lot of paperwork, a lot of red tape,
mm-hmm.
and a lot of permits.
Okay,
and
so it's just very complicated.
So it's possible because we do export Tibet beer to
mm-hmm.
Japan. It's just difficult for everyone to go through this time-consuming
sure.
process and the fees that
so
are
required. Not an obvious solution.
And the
yeah.
and the small women cooperatives that, you know, bottle the honey or make yogurt or
mm-hmm.
the embroidery can't really go through this process to get their products to different parts of the world.
How much can the village sustain itself? I mean, is it it's probably too small to be a totally self-sufficient economy, but is there some of that locally?
It's very difficult for the village to sustain itself, and this is the biggest challenge. We should find ways and to create products if we had
mm-hmm.
a port to export
yeah.
the products, a way to sustain ourselves. But most of the sustainability now is with different organizations bringing in job creation to the village.
Mm-hmm.
When they build a school, when they build a clinic, when they build a multi-purpose room, any type of project that's brought into the village helps create jobs for people that work in those areas in labor.
And the brewery has not done terribly well in recent years, but you're hopeful about that.
Well, the thing is that the economy is completely collapsed for everyone in the Palestinian
yeah.
territory since 2000. Our business dropped immediately 50%, and then in 2001 another 30%. But in the last 2 years, we feel it has a little comeback, and we're not working 100% of our capacity. But if there is peace and democracy and stability, it has the capacity to work 100%.
Sure.
And that's
quickly.
Why we
yeah.
still, many friends closed up and returned wherever they had come from to make their investments in Palestine. We're one of the very few families that continue to brew our Tibet beer and
mm-hmm.
Keep the hope
mm-hmm.
and try to see a little light at the end of the tunnel
right.
that stability could come to that land.
Yeah. One of your other efforts is to do some writing. You've done some children's book. This is Christina in the Holy Land, which is fun. It's Christina visits various holy sites, and it's of interest, I think, to adults as well as children. Here are the sites, and here's why they're significant. You've done the Witness in the Holy Land book, which we talked about earlier. And you've been able to have those available in the United States and all over the world. This one's been translated. So that's raising awareness, and you do some traveling and speaking to groups. What else is going on to try to promote Tibet and to try to promote peace and good relations?
Well, since 2000, I've been traveling in promoting the Christian presence in the mm-hmm. Holy Land, and mostly in trying to raise funds to build homes for Christians that don't have homes in the mm-hmm. village, because we feel the three most important things are education, housing, and creating jobs. And this could help the local population continue mm-hmm. to stay there if they're met. So my project with building homes only meets one need of the people.
But that's a big piece of the puzzle.
Through building the homes, it created a few jobs for the families that built homes.
So how can people from outside the Holy Land help your efforts? Financially, obviously, you need money for homes and clinics and so forth. Are there other things that you hope for from the outside world?
I think what I mostly hope for is for people to pray for the stability there, so they could come and actually visit us, because the greatest type of support you could give is your presence mm-hmm. and your solidarity and really visiting the Christian communities. So instead of just coming and visiting the major holy sites, come out to a little Christian village as well and visit a little Christian community mm-hmm. and have lunch at one of these restaurants, which we only have one restaurant in the whole village, Taib is a Man, and he's completely closed down because there's absolutely no business.
Nobody to eat.
So
yeah.
I meant to say the greatest support is for people to pray for our continued existence and to want to come and to visit and walk the footsteps mm-hmm. of Christ, and at the same time visit. There's many Christian communities to visit, like Jifna, like Birzeit, Zababde, Abud, and Taibe, to be on their list yeah. of places they could come and visit, or to ask for that from their tour guide.
Right, right. Great. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
My guest today has been author and activist Maria Khoury of Palestine, author of the book Witness in the Holy Land. I'm Karen Salpi. Thank you for watching Inner Compass.